हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्थु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
So up to now then we've had that the three princes were born, Pandu, Dhritarashtra, and Vidura. And so then Pandu went out to conquer the world, to reestablish the authority of the Kaurava dynasty, as they hadn't been functioning nice properly with a king for some time. As Shantanu, then his son Vichitravirya, then died, and Bhishma was not sitting on the throne. That was his vow. And so then, after Vyasadeva begot children on his brother's wife, or on his brother's wives, namely Vichitravirya. So then, that would have been the. Yeah. So then they had the three children, Vidura, Pandu, and Dhritarashtra. And so then he going out, establishing the authority, then he reigned for some time, but because he preferred the simple life of the forest, he moved back to the forest, left Dhritarashtra on the throne, to manage and all that. Then Pandu, when he got cursed, then he decided now he'll just move on to Vanaprastha. His wives went with him. Then he's worried about the dynasty itself, how it will go on nicely, because technically Dhritarashtra is not supposed to be the king. And so his sons can't be the king. So that would mean then Pandu's son should be the king. So then he has to have sons. So then Pandu by the advice of the sages, then discussing with Kunti, they find that she has a mantra by which he can call the demigods. And in this way, then he can have children. And so up to now, then Yamaraj was called, and in a spiritual form, then he begat Yudhishthira. Then Vayu, then also in his position, using his mystic potencies, then there was Bhima, who was very powerful. So Yudhishthira was very religious; he's religion personified. And then now they've approached Indra and performed austerities. Indra has been pleased, and says that everything will work out. And all that, so now it's time for Kunti to chant the mantra. Following Pandu's request, Kunti again chanted her mantra. Indra immediately appeared, his bodily luster lighting up the whole region. By the power of the thousand-eyed Indra, Kunti conceived, and in time, a dark-complexioned child was born. Right, so dark complexion means like Krishna. So Krishna and Arjuna have the same color like that. Also Draupadi, we'll see in the future, she has the same, because she's known as Krishna. Arjuna is also known as Krishna, like that. So the three of them had that dark color, the monsoon cloud. For the third time, the heavenly voice was heard resounding over the mountainside. O Kunti, this child will be equal in strength to Indra, and indeed Shiva himself. He will subjugate many powerful kings and greatly increase the prosperity of your dynasty. Agni, Shiva, and Indra will be gratified by this boy's service. He shall have no equal in prowess and will be famous throughout the three worlds. Right, so English drink the Indra because he's Indra's son, but he's also, then he somehow has an aspect of Shiva there. And so we see also that with Hanuman, there's that aspect, that there's some connection there, that kind of potency is there. And then in that way, then they serve the Lord. So then he's very, very powerful. You see, of all of them, his is the power in his fighting and other aspects like that. Bhima is physically the most powerful. He's no less a great king and all that, but we see that in prowess on the battlefield, no one will equal Arjuna. Right? So we see it won't. Sometimes stories come up how it will be seen that it may appear like Karna or Ekalavya and all that, but it's not meant to be. Arjuna is going to be. These are just for some fun in the pastime, so it appears that there's going to be a problem. Overhearing this, as well as other prophecies regarding Arjuna's future greatness, the rishis on that mountain were filled with joy. They uttered blessings while the celestial drums reverberated, and showers of flowers fell from the sky, right? Because the sons of the demigods, and so the demigods reciprocate. Many gods and heavenly sages appeared before Kunti and offered the child benediction. Right? So the demigods and heavenly sages, they came down and personally offered respects, because now you're going to have Arjuna be of the incarnation of Krishna, Nara Narayan. He's the Nara aspect. So he's famous, you know, throughout the universe. Only the ascetic rishis could see them as they appeared in their ethereal forms, standing in chariots and on mountain peaks. So they were all around. So the rishis that were there that the Pandavas were living with, I mean that Pandu was living with, they could see all these demigods and sages coming and giving blessings. That wonderful sight astonished the rishis, and they stood with folded palms. Right, so we see how special is the appearance of the Pandavas. Pandu was delighted. He now had three matchless sons. Seeing the wonderful results of Durvasa's boon, he decided to ask Kunti to use the mantra a fourth time and summon yet another powerful god. Right? Because remember that there's the eight main demigods that a king represents, right? You know, so you have sun, moon, Agni, Vayu, Indra, then Yama, like this. You have all the Kuvera, all these different personalities, you know, the Dikpalas. And so it appears that he's just going to go through all of them like that. But then Kunti says, when he approached her again, however, Kunti refused. O learned man, even in times of emergency, it's never sanctioned by scripture for a woman to have connection with more than three men. Have you forgotten the ordinance? I would become debased if I again conceived by another. Right? So therefore, then this means you might have three children like that, but that's it. You can't go beyond that. So that's her point. Because otherwise, then like this, people just keep going. So because it's not a standard process, then therefore it's limited. The king fell silent. Kunti was right. He decided not to ask for any more sons and continued to live peacefully in the forest with his two wives. The three sons grew luxuriantly in their care. Right, because they're taking care nicely, putting in that effort, that energy, that time, then the kids grow up very nicely. So that's the whole idea. That's the specialness. Parenthood is not just having children, it's putting in that effort to bring them up very nicely. You know, nowadays it may be kind of sometimes popular that people think of just it's nice to have family, but they don't actually understand it's about the effort put in, and then the effects that they grew luxuriantly. It means everything was very, very wonderful, and they're in the forest, right? So it's a matter of the personal interaction. Then one day Madri approached Pandu privately. My lord, I do not complain that you treat me less favorably than Kunti, even though I am of a higher birth. I still have no complaint. My one grief is that you have no sons by me. Right? So he's not complaining because Kunti is the first wife, so she's the main wife, whatever is the position. And so she's coming from the moon dynasty. But it would appear that Madri is coming from the sun dynasty. So just by their family, they're in a higher position. But she's not complaining about that because she knows Kunti, there's always in this process, there's going to be the one wife is the main, the other is subservient. Otherwise, if not, they'd constantly be fighting and there'd be no peace at all. So then this way, one's head, and then everything goes down from there. But she says she has no complaint about anything, no matter what it is, but she has a grief that she doesn't have any sons. Madri found her position unbearable. No princess in her line had ever gone without issue. Right? So in all their line, in all the history, all of the princesses all had sons. Right? Kunti had three sons. Madri had heard that Dhritarashtra's wife, Gandhari, had given birth to 100 sons in Hastinapur. Yet she, the lawful wife of a great healer, was childless. She asked Pandu to request Kunti to teach her the mantra. Mandri explained that she was too shy to ask her directly, since Kunti was her rival. All right, so they can't just that mood there is because they are in that way equals, you know. Then she feels shy to ask because then, you know, she would be afraid Kunti may use it, you know, in a position of superiority or this and that. So if Pandu asks, then it takes on a different mood. Plus then it puts, Madhuri has that control, she controls the husband, and husband controls Kunti. That makes her in control. It's subtle, but it's what's working. Pandu looked with compassion at his younger wife. Dearest lady, I had been already considering this myself. I was reluctant to ask you because I was not sure how you might feel. Right? Because he didn't know how she feels, so she didn't want her to ask. Because remember, she asked Kunti in the beginning and she wasn't interested. And then he had to go through and establish that by, you know, how you say, Dharma Shastra, it was okay. But he wasn't sure then what Madhuri's mood was. Now that I know your mind, I shall certainly speak with Kunti. I do not think she will refuse. The monarch approached Kunti immediately. He told her of Madhuri's sorrow and asked her to be gracious to her co-wife. Pandu made it clear that he also desired more sons to secure more fully the good of his race, including that of himself and indeed Kunti. Right? Because a child by one is a child by the others. So even if others can't have, then if there's one child in the family, then it's considered they all have. Kunti ascended to her husband's request and told Madhuri, I shall recite the mantra for your benefit. Please think of some deity from whom you desire offspring. Madhuri thought carefully. Most probably Kunti would allow her to use the mantra only once. If she summoned the inseparable twin Ashwini gods, she could get two sons at once, right? Because the point is that she's allowed her this time, but she may not again, because it's her mantra. It's not that she gives it to Madhuri now, it's Madhuri's, and she uses it as she wishes. The boon was given to her, and so then she would do it. So she's worried about this, you know. If she summoned inseparable twin Ashwinis, she could get two sons at once. Even as she thought of the two gods, they appeared before her, aglow with celestial splendor. Bashfully, she asked that they unite with her to conceive children, and they immediately agreed. They begot upon Madhuri two boys of incomparable beauty, who were named Nakula and Sahadev. Upon their birth, a divine voice said, these virtuous and accomplished sons will transcend in energy and beauty even their celestial fathers. Because the Ashwinis are considered very, very attractive. That's why we see before there was that aspect. They're the physicians of the demigods, right? The doctors. But at the same time, they're attractive. So that's why we had that story with Chavana. They took on that mood that he would be beautiful like them. With five godly sons, Pandu felt that the future success of his dynasty was assured. The rishis performed all the rites of passage for the boys, and they grew up swiftly. Just after 1 year, they appeared as if they were 5 years old. With five godly sons, Pandu felt that the future success of his dynasty was assured. Like we see, so he's satisfied, Madhuri's happy, everybody's happy, so they're not going for more, because he was just going to be happy with the three, though he would like more, so then Madhuri had two more, and then so, you know, you have to be intelligent to understand what is over-endeavor and what is just naturally coming. So then this point, to go more than this, then you may upset Kunti, you may upset Madhuri, you may upset, you know, so many things. The rishis performed all the rites of passage for the boys, and they grew up swiftly. Just after 1 year, they appeared as if they were 5 years old, right? Because these great personalities, they grow up bigger, quicker. Like the standard thing is that it's 1.5 times. So if they're 1 year old, they'll appear as 1.5. If they're 5, they'll appear as 7.5. You know, does that make sense? You know, if they're 12, then they'll appear as 18. You know, they'll have that maturity. So them being from the demigods, then it seems that it's, you know, especially has that quickness to it. Pandu was overwhelmed with happiness at seeing his sons, extraordinary strength, beauty, energy, and wisdom. Pandu was overwhelmed at happiness at seeing his sons, extraordinary strength, beauty, energy, and wisdom. All the boys became favorites of the rishis, and they sported like five Gandharvas descended to earth. So the all these different aspects, these opulences that someone has, these, that's all a sign of the great piety and, you know, a great elevated personality. So the beauty is the origin of that, because of the kshatriyas, then it brings out the strength is always very important there. The energy, because if they don't have energy, how do you get things done? If they're feeling lazy, then you won't be a good king. And wisdom, because they have the energy, they have all these things, but if they don't have wisdom, how do you apply it nicely? You know, you just take advantage of them, and so it doesn't work good. And like five Gandharvas descended to earth, so you're going to see is that that's also foreshadowing the aspect of that they in one sense, they are five Gandharvas, or five Indras, or five, like this. So all these great aspects of the demigods the Pandavas have. They have nothing less than the demigods. Pandu's sons all became fearless bowmen who are capable, even in their very, very youth, for facing furious mountain lions. The rishis schooled them in every facet of Vedic knowledge, right? Because they're right there. So it's just, you know, it's Gurukul. So it's just the rishis then train them in all the knowledge and all that. Then their father will show them all the martial arts, the bows and everything, because Pandu was very expert. So even at a young age, then they're able to deal with the lions and all that. You know, because get out to shoot a lion means you have to be out there where the lion is. You know, so they had no fear. So you can see, like, I think Bharat Maharaj, when he was 3, he used to go out and catch lions and then tie them up to the tree, you know, like you would, you know, like little kids, they get a like a puppy or a cat and they want to tie it up and keep it there. So he would catch, you know, lions and tigers and tie them up to the tree, you know, so that they would be there and he could play with them and everything like that. So, yeah, these kshatriyas were something special. They were astonished to see the boys growing so rapidly, the sages, like lotuses blooming in a lake, right? So the you know, that just comes up, they're very beautiful, but it's untouched by the water and everything. Pandu and his wives offered prayers of thanks to Lord Vishnu for their great fortune, and they went on living in the Himalayan region, raising their children with affection. And so they're happy there, they're raising the children and all that, and then when they're trained, then at some point it'll be time for them to go down and continue the you know, administration. So chapter 3, the Pandavas come to Hastinapur. In Hastinapur, Dhritarashtra performed 5 sacrifices with the wealth Pandu had given him. He gave charity to hundreds of thousands of brahmanas and satisfied the gods with his offerings. The kingdom flourished and the citizens had everything they desired. They were devoted to virtue, sacrifice, and truth. Bearing love and affection for one another, they grew in prosperity. Right? So because they have the proper relationships, the Vedic system is always on that the relationships are maintained in their proper way in a sattvic environment. Right? So there's that mood of sacrifice, that mood of duties, and in that environment, then you take care of the proper interactions with others. And so we see Dhritarashtra, because he's been trained properly, then he's doing all these things and it works nicely. Everything goes well in the kingdom. Hastinapur was filled with countless palaces and mansions. There were golden arches and crystal fountains everywhere. Between broad paved highways lay beautiful gardens, and the air was filled with sweet fragrance of blossoming trees. So you see, you have the big roads, but in between were gardens. So it wasn't just you had these highways and that with nothing, just cement jungle. It was always nice gardens. So they were always like boulevards. You had one street, then you had the garden and the other street, and then, you know, houses on both of those sides and things like that. The clatter of horses' hooves and chariot wheels resounded everywhere, mixing with the sounds of trumpeting elephants and the blare of conch shells marking the beginning of sacrificial performances. Right, so everybody was performing yajñas and doing sacrifice and puja and everything. Holy chants uttered by numerous Brahmins emanated from tall and exquisitely constructed temple buildings, which graced the city in their thousands. So in one city, there's thousands and thousands of temples. Not this idea there's one temple and it controls everything, because you can't. Everybody can't in the city can't go to one temple, right? Maybe for some special festival, but on a daily basis you go to the one in your neighborhood. So that way a big city can have thousands and thousands of temples. Like we see a small village like Vrindavan has 5,000, right? You know, so Hastinapur appeared like Indra's celestial capital, and each day dozens of feudal kings would arrive bringing tribute. Right? So they're the emperors of the world, so kings from all around the world would be coming to pay tribute to the kings in Hastinapur, because they'll maintain peace, because if anybody makes trouble, the Hastinapur will go out and settle it. It's not that they take tax with no responsibility. No, you're taking tax, you have to protect. That's what you have. You have authority, there must be responsibility. Assisted by Bhishma, Dhritarashtra ruled the kingdom on Pandu's behalf, right? Because Bhishma's there, he's controlling the thing. And so then, and Dhritarashtra actually runs, but he listens to Bhishma Dev, and also he'll listen to Vidura. So then everything will go very well. After Pandu's curse and his subsequent retirement, Dhritarashtra, despite his blindness, was installed as monarch. Right? Technically, he shouldn't have been, but he was. He thought sadly of his brother and missed him greatly. But in his absence, he competently managed all the affairs of state. Right? Because he has the Kshatriya qualities, he has them learning. And so then he, with the guidance of Bhishma and the Brahmins, then he'll be able to run the kingdom very well. It once came to pass that Vyasadev arrived hungry and thirsty at Dhritarashtra's palace. Gandhari attended to him conscientiously. Vyasadev was pleased with the girl and blessed her. You shall soon have 100 sons as powerful as your husband. In due course of time, Gandhari conceived. For 2 years she bore the embryo within her womb, becoming increasingly anxious. Then one day news reached her that Kunti had given birth in the forest to a boy as effulgent as the morning sun. Yeah, so Yudhishthira was born first. He's the eldest. That's why then even if you're talking about all these, and Dhritarashtra's on the throne, but the eldest son, the next one is Yudhishthira, so the throne's actually his. Because the throne was his father's, but because he retired, then Dhritarashtra took up. But because he's the eldest of the sons in the line, he'll be the next king. Out of frustration and anger at her own excessively long gestation, she violently struck her womb. She then brought forth a hard mass of flesh that resembled an iron ball. As her nurses informed her of the stillbirth, she was afflicted by grief and thought of Vyasadev and his boon. Right, because Vyasadev said she'll have 100 sons, so she's thinking, how is this going to work? At once the sage appeared and before her and said, what have you done? Because right, otherwise, you just wait. These things, you have some special boons, it takes extra time. Something special, it takes, like we see with for Arjuna, then they did austerities and everything like that, and then the child was there. Gandhari told him how she had become overwhelmed with envy and frustration when she had heard of Kunti giving birth to Yudhishthira. She's known as the most chaste. It doesn't mean that she won't have these qualities of envy and frustration. No, those just come up when one gets too emotional. With tears in her eyes, she said, I struck my womb and this lump of flesh came out. What then was the meaning of your boon? Right? So the thing is, it's even here, then the feminine nature is that she's not wrong, because you're supposed to be 100 sons, but there's not 100 sons. So he's at fault there. So these are just things you just go with. Like you see Vyasadev, points out. Vyasadev replied that his words could never prove false. He asked his servants to bring 100 pots filled with ghee. He sprinkled cool water on the lump of flesh, and it gradually divided into 100 parts, each the size of a thumb. These were placed in the pots, which were sealed and placed in a concealed spot. Vyasadeva instructed that the pot should be opened only after 2 more years had passed. Right. So, in other words, it would have been a pregnancy of 4 years. But since 2 years went, and that, so still he had the 2 years. You're going to wait. You know, you want 100 sons, and it doesn't, normally that would take, 150 years or something like this. But the point is here is in one sense. So, it's just because of the rivalry with Kunti, then this mood's come up. He then departed for his lonely mountain ashram, right? Because if he was thought of and all that, then he would come. That was the whole point. Exactly after the 2 years had elapsed, the pots were opened one by one. From the first came a child who was named Duryodhana. At the moment he was brought out of the pot, the sound of braying asses and screaming vultures was heard. Slightly different than when the Pandavas appeared, where the demigods then made pronouncements and that, and showered flowers and all those kind of things. So he just had asses were braying and the vultures were screaming like that. So you know something's wrong here. Jackals howled and the wind blew fiercely without any apparent cause, right? There wasn't a storm, it just happened. Fires sprang up all around the city and raged in all directions. So you can get an idea that there's something wrong with this boy. Because you see, her mood was envy. She was envious of Kunti, that her sons. So, so she had sons first, and she wanted to be the one that had the sons first. Because if her sons are first, they sit on the throne. Kunti's are first. Kunti sits on the throne. So there was that element of jealousy and envy there. And so that will then naturally be in the mood within the children. So we see Duryodhana was very envious of Yudhishthira, and he wanted to sit on the throne. The frightened King Dhritarashtra summoned the Brahmanas, as well as Bhishma, Vidura, and other ministers and counselors. He asked them the meaning of the omens. The king said, "The eldest of the princes is undoubtedly Yudhishthira, and he should inherit the kingdom. I do not dispute that, right, at this point. But will my own son become the king after him? O wise ones, please tell me what is right and lawful." Right, because the idea is Yudhishthira will be king, then after that will be Duryodhana. Because that's the difficulties, because the blind king has the aspect of he's dependent. So then you're also going to get this aspect of that dependency on these, material facilities and this. So he's, in this way, though he technically knows, but be able to apply it as vigyan, then he's technically blind, and especially to the spiritual aspect. Like we'll see later, that he understands who Krishna is, knows who Krishna is, but he still can't surrender in devotion. Like that. As Dhritarashtra spoke, the terrible sounds began again from all sides. Hearing this, Vidura replied to the king, "When these omens are seen at the birth of a child, it is evident that he will be the exterminator of his race. Our prosperity and future depend upon his being abandoned. Do not hesitate, O king. This child must be cast away at once." Means he'll be taken out to the forest, and then he'll grow up with the forest dwellers out there. Because they'll bring the child there, they'll take the child, raise him there. So it's the same person he lives on, but he doesn't have the facilities to be king. So he'll be therefore a forest dweller. And so he wouldn't have any right to the throne. And that way then he can be the destruction of the of that that those particular forest group that's there. Vidura told Dhritarashtra that he would still have many other sons. There would be no sin in abandoning this child. As the scriptures clearly state that an individual can be abandoned for the sake of a family, right? Because he said these symptoms will mean the whole family will be destroyed. And we see at the Battle of Kurukshetra that basically down to the last man, everybody was destroyed like that. So out of these 100 sons, all of them were killed like that. Yes. So it's like one stepbrother was there. He wasn't of the 100 like that, but everybody else was wiped out, so there was no one left. Indeed, a family can be abandoned for the sake of a village, a village for the sake of a city, and the world itself can be abandoned for the sake of the soul. So the idea is that for that greater aspect, then you may have to sacrifice, one group for the greater, for the society, for the nation. But ultimately, one can give up the whole world to become God conscious. You don't have to worry that, oh, this duty is not that. If to become God conscious, you have to give up the world. Then that's the standard. Dhritarashtra was unable to accept Vidura's counsel. He looked away from Vidura and said nothing in reply. As the nurse stood by holding the baby, the king waved her towards Gandhari, and the child was handed to her, right? Because he could have sent her out to the forest, and then they would have raised him. But instead, he was too attached. So right here, we already see that he knows Yudhishthira is the person, but he's attached. And as time goes, he gets more and more attached to his son, idea of his son being there. His son is more and more attached, totally attached, to the point where it's the destruction of the whole dynasty. He doesn't care as long as he's the king. You know, that's the whole point. He doesn't care if all those warriors are killed in the battlefield as long as he's king. Well, we'll see the opposite with Arjuna, that his point is why all these people should die just over a kingdom. We'll go to the forest. Like that. So very opposite. So we see in the opening in the Bhagavad Gita, that first chapter, it's establishing how the difference in the mood. The one has respect for the authorities. Duryodhana doesn't really, you know, how Pandava is caring about all these others, even though it may be material. Duryodhana couldn't care less. And then when guided in a spiritual life, then Arjuna takes that mood and then acts properly. So then he waved the nurse towards Gandhari. So then she gets the baby, then she's going to take care. She'll be attached. But if he goes to the forest, then, you know, there's 99 other sons. Bhishma and Vidura looked at one another but said nothing. Dhritarashtra was the monarch. His word was final. So they give advice. That's the whole point, is that Bhishma is senior, but at the same time, he's not the monarch. You know, so this is a very important lesson also in just position of responsibility, is that someone's in charge of managing it. They're the ones that has the say. The people who may be senior to him and give advice, they're not in control. This is not a well understood. This is a Vedic tradition like that. We see sometimes in the modern, if you're in charge, you're on top of everything. You're above everybody. But here, you're not above everybody. You're below those who are advisors. But still, the advisor's authority stops that they're the manager, right? And then the manager's authority stops that he's not the wisest one there, right? So that way, there's a balance. Over the course of the next month, all the pots were opened, and 100 boys and one girl were brought out. All the boys bore the sign of being great warriors and rulers. The king and queen rejoiced in their good fortune. Dismissing the evil omens, they dwelt contently in Hastinapur, attended by Bhishma and Vidura. So, you know, over the course, they opened all the pots, and this way then there was 100 sons. They were very, very happy. And this way then they went on. The sons had all the great, signs of being great warriors and all that, you know, which we saw they were. And so then they were happy, but they dismissed the evil omens just because of attachment. So that's another reason that the blind king shouldn't be king, because he's too dependent on things, so it means he's more attached. Well, we see Pandu, he was a good king because he wasn't attached. He could go to the forest like that, but Dhritarashtra doesn't want to do that and doesn't want his sons to do that. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.